Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. My name is Alex Clark, and I am your host today, joined by the best hosts in the business. They are the ones with the most riz and full of fizz. It is Matthias Allman Kurosaki and Ryan Splash Potts. My main man, how are we doing on this Monday evening?
I just got a WTF ha 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 message from my boss, and it perfectly sums up what you just said.
You're not wrong. Look, when we were doing the pre of this, I said, hey, do you guys mind if I go ultra cringy with this? And you said, go for it. So I blame you 100% fully for this.
Honestly, look, I respect it.
Look, I have generational riz. So
honestly, to be fair, now that I'm thinking about it, I should have just said, the best host in the biz, absolutely dripping with riz.
But ooh, that would have been nice.
That would have been, yeah, that would have been clever.
I am the Wizard of Oz, if you will. So, yes.
All right. That's and with that, thank you so much, Aaron, for tuning in for today's episode of Lots of Above Replacement.
And I respect that. I respect the creativity, too. I would say I'm doing well. This is actually, come to think of it, the last episode we're recording where I'm a 22-year-old. I'm set to turn 23 tomorrow as of this recording. So I guess by the time this comes out, I'll be 23. So yeah, I'm doing well though.
I mean, I feel like now after Splash's comments, now I should say I want to go over to DQ and go get a Rizzard. But anyway,
man, happy
early birthday there, Mac. Right,
yeah, happy early birthday,
you.
Mac.
Thank you,
yeah.
Guys.
Hearing you guys say that you're that old really makes me feel old, man. I'm 29. But
hey, we get to be the same age like 35 days a year. That's pretty cool. Or 40 days
a year.
Yeah,
exactly.
Congratulations. I don't. Anyway, I'm doing all right. I actually stayed home from work today because I wasn't feeling 100%. But did some self-care and I'm doing fine right now. Ready to go for the podcast. As we get ready to start things out today, we have a few bits of news we want to cover here. As the very first one we do want to talk about a little bit is that the Tampa Bay Rays finally lost on their amazing, amazing win streak. I believe it was 13 games that they got to, tying the modern major league record here at 13, almost able to get to 14, but the Blue Jays had other plans. Guys, the Tampa Bay Rays, again, probably one of the more unlikely stories. We all kind of were, to be real, we were kind of dogging on the Rays a little bit at the beginning of the season before everything. What are your guys' kind of notes about what the Rays have done so far in this early season?
If you want to hear Alex's real thoughts on the Rays, go over to our Twitter at @LAR_baseball. I uploaded our power rankings today, and Alex was trying to convince us that he was going to keep them out of the top five. And we told him, you're an idiot. You are going to get absolutely blasted to the face of the moon for that. So,
yeah, I concur there.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Yeah. To be fair, I very much think that the Rays are overhyped. I think when you take a look at their starting schedule, it's not as good as it should be. I do think that you have to be really good to try and break through some of the luck barriers that it takes to get through 13 wins and all that. But I don't know. I just still think that they're overhyped. But that's just me.
Look, they are second in MLB history. They're tied for second in terms of longest winning streak to open the season. The only team to beat them, this is the pre-modern record, the 1884 St. Louis Maroons. They had players Dave Rowe, Joe Quinn, Fred Dunlap, Jack Gleason, George Baker, Henry Boyle. Those all sound pretty reasonable. Then we get Orator Schaefer, Milt Whitehead, and Buttercup Dickerson. That is the history the Rays
What's up,
made.
Buttercup?
Yeah, exactly. The Rays are challenging a team, almost challenging a team that had a player named Buttercup play 46 games, a player named Orator. I've never heard that name in any capacity play 106 games. Come on now. Come on now.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing here is that I understand that the Rays weren't necessarily playing a strong schedule. However, it's that they were beating down their opponents pretty well. I mean, their first, I believe their first nine wins were by four or more runs, which is very good. You know, it's that's not a small margin. And then even after they lost two in a row, they bounced back with an 8-1 win yesterday. They're still, as a team, they still have put up an 896 OPS and lead the majors in runs scored, have allowed the fewest runs. I think that, well, I'm not going to say the Rays are going to, you know, break the all-time win record or anything. They're a solid team. I think they're somewhere in between this and what they were last year. So they won 86 games last year. I think they're probably around a 90 to 95 win team, but regardless, it's not easy to win major league games no matter who your opponent is. So I think that right now, as you see on Twitter, I rank the Rays as my number one in the power rankings. That's probably going to change soon, but I think they've done enough to deserve that spot.
And I mean, I get the arguments here, and I think you've got some fantastic points. My thing is just that, again, I look at the strength of schedule, and when you are at the major leagues, yes, every team is going to be tough to a degree, but there really is just a definite talent gap between, say, the Rays and the A's, or between, if I take a look at some of the other teams they've played here, there was a definite amount of talent gap between the A's and even the, I would say even the Red Sox. Like, I think the Red Sox are not looking good this year. Like, and also not to mention as well, the Tigers and the Nationals. Like, this is a team that right now they've definitely beat down on teams that you need to. And I love what they're doing for the sole fact of it's the thing that I want my Mariners to do more. When you are better than the other team, beat down on that team. Do not play down to your competition, which is why, like, I eventually relented and did put the Rays in my top five. I did put them at number one. I put them at number four. The only teams ahead of them I have were the Braves, Brewers, and Blue Jays, a team that eventually dethroned them. Because I am also the mindset that if you dethrone a team and you're already doing good yourself, you're ahead of that team. Whereas a lot of people in the college football playoff rankings don't seem to understand very much. Anyway, regardless.
Ooh, sick burn.
It's ouch.
I mean, it's true, isn't it? Like,
I agree.
Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope because then you have things like, well, the Tigers are better than the Astros. Okay, come on now. Let's have a real civilized conversation here. But no, I will say with the Rays that the impressive thing wasn't winning 13 games in a row. It was dominating 13 games in a row. And I think that's the takeaway, that they have a gear I didn't know they had. They have that accelerator. And it's not that they beat bad teams, which you're supposed to do. They mollywopped bad teams. They weren't in many close games. They weren't, you know, in high leverage situations in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning. Besides out of the one game, Devers struck out with the bases loaded down a run in the eighth inning, something screwy like that, and Lau hit a home run in the next inning. Okay, fair enough. One out of the 13 games was close. This was a tour de force. Is it going to continue? Probably not. But I think that it's good to put that out there into the universe, that the Rays do have that extra gear that, hey, they went out and took care of business. You put how many other teams in the league, you put those 13 games out ahead of them and they go 13-0. I don't know if any, I'm not betting on any other team to do that. You'd probably get plus 500-600 odds for a team to go 13-0 in that stretch.
Oh no, I agree.
Yeah,
and that's what it comes. The thing. Yeah.
Well, I will say it's difficult to win 13 games in a row at any point in time in any sport. So, like, you know what the Rays did. I think that yeah, sure, it's maybe inflated by who they faced, but I mean that I think it proves that they're no slouch. Like I said, I mean you can't, like, you know, those other teams that they faced, I mean, they're not going to win. I mean, heck, even the best teams in history, I mean, how many of them win 13 games in a row or more? Like, it's not that common. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, for those of you that have watched the movie Moneyball, you know the A's went 20 and know that Murderer's Row, a lot of people think the greatest lineup of all time, their biggest winning streak in that year was 9. So, baseball is weird because in that same stretch, you can have just days in a row where you are just better than the other team and you're going to win each of those games. That can happen. It doesn't happen often. No, because in every game of baseball, there is so much that can happen. There's so much that can go wrong to where winning that amount of games in a row just seems ludicrous, but it's possible. And that's what I'm saying here. And I'm not saying that the Rays are slouches at all. I think they're a good team and I think they're definitely going to be pushing for a playoff spot this year. But do I think that they are at the top of the power list? Do I think that they are a team that's going to continue this level of dominance all the way throughout? Absolutely not. I really don't think they have that, considering the fact that, again, you look at these teams, I think that there is still very much a talent gap in baseball. Like, you brought up the idea of, hey, we could call the Tigers better than the Astros with that logic. And I'm like, no, you can't, because you still take into account how good the teams fully are. And it just from what we know as baseball people, like, we know that the Astros are one of the best teams in the league, potentially the best. And you can't say that one team is better just from a win or two. But like, for my case, when I put the Rays against the Blue Jays and the Blue Jays win those games, I'm okay putting the Blue Jays ahead of them, because they're still a stacked team with amazing talent throughout all of it. Whereas the Rays are also a good team with a lot of talent through all of it, but the Blue Jays are the team that dethroned them. But with that, we're going to move on here from our next man. If you want to know more about our power rankings, make sure you go follow us on Twitter at LAR_baseball. Here, I make sure I said it wrong earlier. I'm getting it right now because I'm getting better. But we all have all of our power rankings that we're going to be updating those fairly frequently. But now we're going to move on to our next topic. Two different pitchers have gotten pitching extensions, or extensions of their contract, I should say. We have in Pablo Lopez and Logan Webb. Each of them are going to be staying with their teams for a bit. Guys, let's start off here with Pablo Lopez, another guy that was a lot of talk during the offseason because of, you know, again, the trade that happened, bringing him, I believe, over to the Twins. So, guys, talk about this extension when it comes to Lopez. The Twins did not waste any time in getting this taken care of.
I don't know how the state of Minnesota pulled this off, but they have, in the last 5 years, gotten the most even NFL trade in NFL history and the most even MLB trade in NFL or in MLB history. You have the Diggs and Jefferson trade, which is essentially a superstar wide receiver for superstar wide receiver. And now you get a batting champion for an ace in Major League Baseball. And I think the Twins are smart to capitalize on Lopez. And look, does he have this tendency to wear down during the season? You know, potentially. But he's also not going to face the Mets 10 times. I know the Mets kind of take him behind the woodshed. So that's good. Good news for him. And he's not going to have to face the Braves, right? So I think the Twins are smart here, locking up their guy. And they are constructing a very good rotation. You have Joe Ryan. You have Kenta Maeda. And you're just getting that depth, and they have lacked this depth in recent seasons, kind of like Texas, that, oh, it's cool when you have Martin Perez as your number one, but you'd rather have him as your number three or your number four. And now you're moving a Joe Ryan out of being that ace, being that number one guy. Now he's your three because you have Maeda, who, remember 2020, he was the runner-up to the American League Cy Young. And you have a guy that I think is a star in Pablo Lopez. It's a good team-friendly deal, player-friendly deal. It buys out some arbitration years. Baseball contracts are always going to be weird for guys that aren't super old. But I think Minnesota, good move there. And I know you're looking at Luis Arias down in Miami. He's hitting 470. It's the 11th best 15-game start to a guy ever for joining a new franchise or as a rookie. I get that. There's some FOMO there, but I think the Twins get a W in the column. Maybe not a huge W, but they get a W in the column for this trade and this extension.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, obviously it hurt to trade, I'm sure it hurt for them to trade the reigning batting champion, but they needed pitching above all. And I think eventually they will have enough talent, especially once Royce Lewis comes back. And this year, Lopez has been fantastic through four starts. I mean, 26 innings pitched, major league leading 33 strikeouts. And this is a guy who, I mean, before last year, he had never made more than 21 starts in a season. He made 32 starts. And like you said, Splash, the Mets torched him last year. If you take away that, he's actually a well above average pitcher. And I know that's kind of cherry picking there, but I think he's a good pitcher, you know, and I'm not expecting him to, you know, maintain a 2.54 ERA plus, but he's been an above average pitcher every year since 2020. I mean, 107 ERA plus last year, 138 the year before, 126 the year before that. So I think this is a good signing. I think you know, I don't know if he's necessarily an ace on every team, but I think he's either a two or three on every major league team. And I think, you know, having him and Joe Ryan in the same rotation going forward, I think overall it's a good deal.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. The deal itself right now totals out to 4 years, $73.5 million. Dollars is reported earlier today. We can remember we record these podcasts on the Monday before they go out here, and that was reported at 8:49 a.m. Apparently, there is still some pending stuff going on with it, as but mostly the completion of a physical. But that totals out to about on average $18.375 million a year. And for a strong starting pitcher option that has the potential to be an ace, that's really good. I would take that, especially for that you're going to have for the next 4 years. Whereas we've seen with him, he's really just gotten better. He's really started to go a lot more, excuse me, trying to figure out things a lot better, especially considering the fact that he already has a one WAR on the season, currently a WHIP of 0.808. But as we've looked at him mature and play a little bit better, this means you're getting him for what I like to call the prime of his career, because right now he's right at that 27 age, is right when you start to get to that prime age. Some people like to say a little bit later. At least 27 is a pretty good estimate of that. That means you're going to have him at the very minimum now until he's 31 years old, which that's strong. And that doesn't include it if you want to try and trade him away again, or if you want to try and extend him again, so that you could theoretically have him even longer. I think that right now he has been a fantastic option and has already done very, very well. One thing I think is kind of funny right now, and I understand we're only a few starts into 2023, but he has an even, I know we don't care about win-loss percentage because it doesn't mean anything, but since 2021, he is exactly even on wins and losses, going 16-16, which I just find that kind of funny. But regardless, I think that he is a good option, and you're right, Splash. I think that this has been a very nice even trade for the both sides of it, especially with Arias doing really good work in Miami, including getting, I believe, the first cycle in Marlins history.
Yep.
Yeah, retweet this post if your team is hit for the cycle.
Exactly.
Your team can do that now.
Hell yeah. And so, you know, it's a good thing that this trade has worked out now well for both teams. This is what you always like to see. But for Pablo Lopez and the Twins, as you said, they're starting to build up a decent rotation. And that's really what I think a lot of times has killed the team in the playoffs, is that they're just a full lack of pitching depth. Now they're starting to get that with guys like Lopez and with Ryan. So good on the Twins and good for Pablo Lopez getting paid, getting a nice little extension. So we're going to move on now to our next guy. Logan Webb signs a deal to stay in the Bay. Gets another 4-year deal. Guess what? This number's going to sound a little bit familiar. It's that's with Pablo Lopez. My apologies. I was misreading because I'm having trouble. But no, Logan Webb stays in the Bay. On this season, has not done amazingly. He's had a bit of trouble right now on the current season so far. He has an ERA plus right now of 90, so below average. And on top of it, an ERA of 4.76. So that doesn't take away really anything, though. Over the career, still an 8.4 WAR guy. What are your guys' takes on Logan Webb? Do you think that the Giants also got a good deal on Webb keeping him in San Francisco? Do you think that the Twins got a better deal with Lopez?
I like this signing personally for the Giants, and I get that Webb is off to a slow start this year, but this is only his age 26 season, and he's been really good the last 2 years. I mean, 2021, he came up, he was like one of the best pitchers in baseball in the second half, only allowed 9 homers in 148 in the third innings that year. And then last year, he pitched a career-high 192 in the third innings and only had a 2.90 ERA and only allowed 11 home runs. Which, I mean, that's a great rate. He's a good sinker baller. I really like his mechanics. 11th place in the Cy Young voting last year. And that's the thing, is this year, actually, his strikeouts are up, his walks are down, but his home runs are way up. He's already allowed 4 homers in 17 innings, and he allowed, like I said, he allowed 11 last year and 192 in a third. So, obviously, you expect that to come down. I mean, he's a ground ball pitcher for the most part in his career. He's got a heavy sinker with good breaking stuff, but he's young. It's a team friendly contract, in my opinion. It's good for him because say he shows out and, you know, he'll hit free agency at age about 31, 32. He he could parlay this into a much bigger contract when he hits free agency. So I think these are both good contracts, honestly. It's tough to say which one is better, but I really like this one for both the Giants and for Webb.
Yeah, those four home runs have come against Max Muncy, Aaron Judge, Gleyber Torres, Mookie Betts. He's not allowing cheap.
I heard that Judge guy is pretty good, I'll tell you that much.
Giants legend Arson Judge, by the way.
Yep.
Arson Judge, the best player of our day and
age.
Yeah,
man, they could have been teammates.
Exactly. And Carlos Correa could have been there. but good times. I think with Webb, to me, it boils down. Let's take a step back. Let's go to October 2021. The Giants have won 107 games. They're hosting the Dodgers in the NLDS. You know who dropped his nuts on the Dodgers? Logan Webb. Do you know how to get a city behind you, get a fan base behind you? You embarrass your biggest rival in the playoffs, not once but twice. 14 innings allowed, one earned run. That is the kind of thing that gets you an extension. I know he has an ERA north of 4.5 right now. That's because they've played the Yankees, the White Sox, and the Dodgers. Pretty good offenses there. They're going to score runs. When he gets into the flow of the season and you get a game against the Rockies and you get a game against the famed deer tranquilizers in Arizona and the ringworms in San Diego, and you play the A's and the Nationals, the ERA is going to come down. I'm not worried about that. But what I do know is that Logan Webb, to quote Alex, has that dog in him. And that's why you pay a guy like that, and you pay him to, you know, have the opening day duel against Gerrit Cole. He was very good opening day. They got the loss. Yeah, absolutely. He allowed 4 runs. Absolutely. But sometimes the ERA doesn't tell the full story. This is the Gerrit Cole thing. The last seemingly his entire Yankees tenure, his ERA, oh, his ERA is too high. He's still an ace. He's still a star. Logan Webb, maybe not quite a sprite. He's still a star. He's still the ace of the staff. He's still a very good pitcher. And I think this is a great deal for the Giants.
Shout out there to Soho Brody for the has that dog in him reference. But no, yeah, honestly, I really like this deal. And very similar to the deal for Lopez, it is a 5-year deal. So 1 year more, $90 million, which averages to 18 a year. So again, pretty even on the money deal wise. And I agree. I think that the Webb deal might be the better one. Just because I think that when it comes to Webb, he's one that's a little more endeared already to the Giants franchise, especially for the reference that Splash has already made. I probably shouldn't repeat that one. But no, he's done exceptionally well, and he's been the stalwart of a very strong rotation, especially since Rodon left. Like, I think that right now for this team and for what we see for the Giants, he is a fantastic addition, and one that, yes, while the ERA is a little bit high right now, that's been because he's played against some really strong teams. Give him a little time to settle in. We go, like you said, against the A's, against the Nationals. So these other teams, that number is going to go down. The ERA plus is going to go up. So right now, we've talked about the extensions here. If you had to make a choice right now on which one is the best between these two, which one is going to have the most impact on their team? Who do you think? Which team do you think got the best deal? My personal thought, like I've already said, is I think Logan Webb is the better one just because it's slightly a little less money. It's to a franchise he's already fully endeared to, and he's still just a great pitcher, and I think one that the Giants are going to enjoy for also an extra year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Webb too, partially because he's also a year younger than Lopez. And I just think that he's got he's done this, you know, now 2 years in a row. And I think that he's just going to keep improving. I think that the home run rate's definitely going to come down this year. But I think while his strikeouts might not be, you know, 11 per nine necessarily, I think he's not a bad strikeout pitcher. So I think that he's going to be probably I think he's going to make the most out of this. And I think the Giants are going to reap the rewards of it.
I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. I'll go with Lopez. I think he might be a marginally better pitcher, like inning for inning. I don't know if he has the ace pedigree. Again, this is the Cole debate all over again. But Webb might be your prototypical ace, like frontline guy, but it's not saying the number two guy is a scrub. It's so I'm going to lean like 51% towards Pablo Lopez here. I think the Twins are going to get a good return on investment, betting early on him. Webb, not anything against Webb. I think Lopez has that extra tick, I think. Although, hey, Logan Webb is currently a playoff legend. So maybe a fourth World Series to the Bay will change that.
Hey, very well, very possible. I still will very much, like the Giants just because, they got my boy Mitch Haniger over there. So anyway, moving on from there, we're going to move on now to our next segment here. As we're done with the news, it is now time for three words only, where this time it is breakout players edition here. We have a few players that we have seen over the start of this season really bust out and have become true names for at least to start right now. We've got three guys here, and we're going to do our three words about all of them, trying to figure it could be about, do we think they're real? Do we think they're not? Do we think that what's going to happen is going to turn into long-term success or anything like that? So the first name that we're going to bring up here is going to be for one Brandon Marsh. Marsh has had a very, very, very good start to the beginning of the year. Watching what he's done so far, he has an OPS plus right now of 218, an OPS normal of 1.196, just under one WAR, just barely into the start of the season. The guy's been absolutely crushing the ball, not to mention a batting average of 378. So guys, what are your three words for Brandon Marsh? Let's start with Mac on this one. What three words do you got?
So my three words are change of scenery. Because last year, Brandon Marsh was a pretty highly ranked prospect with the Angels, but he wasn't hitting with them at all. And then last year he gets traded for Logan Ohapi, which, by the way, that trade very well could turn into a win-win. But he had a 773 OPS with the Phillies after only a 637 mark with the Angels. And then this year, I mean, he's off to just a torrid start, like you said, Alex. I think that he's probably, obviously, he's not going to maintain this. I mean, he's a 484 BABIP right now, which is probably going to come down. And his 378 ISO is also probably going to come down. But, I mean, there are a lot of signs that point towards him improving. I mean, I think his hard hit rate is up. His average exit velocity is up. Sure, his ground ball rate is way up and his fly ball rate is down. But, I mean, he's a fast guy. I mean, that might be an advantage for his game. So I think that – I don't think Marsh necessarily is going to maintain this. I think he has the potential to be an all-star this year, and the Phillies desperately need contributors. So it's big for the Phillies that he's stepping up.
So my three words are StatCast approves breakout. So he's 69th percentile average exit velocity. Say it with me. Nice. 72nd percentile max exit velo, 60th percentile hard hit, 71st percentile ex-woba. You know, a lot of it's red. The only blue, the only thing below the 50th percent mark is his strikeout rate, which that can fluctuate. Of course, he's on the Phillies, so they don't really care too much. But 89th percentile in whiff rate, 75th percentile in chase rate. So maybe that strikeout rate comes more closer to league average. Like Max said, 89th percentile sprint speed. He's a guy that has the tools to be similarly the a guy that can thrive in ground ball situations, but also a guy that when he puts the ball in the air, he does damage with it. Kind of a very loose approximation of Ronald Acuna. That ground balls, yes, but he's fast enough to beat out some of them. So is he going to hit, 400 the rest of the way? No, probably not. But has he locked down center field for the Phillies? Yes. Do they have a non-automatic out now? Yes. So progress for the Phillies, although I do miss watching Christian Pache play in center field, so that's a bummer. But I think the Phillies, he actually started to have this breakout last year. He had a 116 OPS plus last year in the quarter of a season with Philly, and then is had immortalized in the playoff run alongside the rest of the National League champion Philadelphia Phillies. But I think Marsh qualifies as this toolsy guy, speed. He's going to play good defense. So even if he doesn't hit like this, he's still going to play good defense. He's still going to run the bases well, and he's still going to be a lightning rod in that lineup.
100%. I think that he's going to, I think he's doing well. My three words are Angels feel sad, because I think that right now, like, kind of going on what Max, as soon as he went over to Philadelphia, it wasn't an immediate change. It wasn't an immediate, but he has been a much more solid player since going over to Philadelphia. And this year right now, like, we started to see it at the end of last. We started to see him really start to break out into this player that he is right now showing as. And the question kind of became, especially in the playoffs last year, is can Brandon Marsh continue into 2023? And so far, he's starting to. He is. He's doing really good right now. Like I said, an OPS right now of 1.196, an OPS plus of 2.18. The guy also has speed for days. Look, this is a player that right now was a project over with the A's. And now is really starting to blossom into a much better player. Do I think it is sustainable? Not at the level that it is right now, but if he could even be a 300 hitter, then I don't think anyone in Philadelphia is going to be sad about him. If he could even, I'll even say at 280, he would still be a very fine player, which is also a really good thing for Philadelphia because of the injuries that have happened with that team, with being down a Rhys Hoskins, with being down a Bryce Harper still. That even though Bryce Harper is apparently still trying to learn how to play first base to get back into the game, please no, just take your time, heal up. We want to see you play good baseball. Don't rush it. But right now, Brandon Marsh is providing an excellent stopgap for the team and is making that team better.
Okay, I do have two things for you. One, I think the Angels like Ogun Ohapi, and they kind of have an outfield logjam. Anyways, Renfro has been nice, Ward, Trout, and then the first base, I would like that just for our Ward draft so he's not getting the DH penalty every game.
That's fair. Okay, yeah, I know that the it's like Logan Ohave, but at the same time, you still can't look at Brandon Marsh and say, I don't want that on my team.
I mean, I yeah, at the same time, Ohave, I think, is turning into one of the better defensive or better offensive catchers in baseball. And so, I mean, I thought that the Phillies took a risk by trading him. I understand he was only a 23rd round pick, but he was a fast riser through the minors. So I thought the Phillies took a risk by trading him for Marsh, but it was sort of like, you know, trading one young guy for another. And Marsh, I think, you know, maybe this is his breakout year, his true breakout year, and he becomes an all-star while, you know, Ohapi is a rookie of the year finalist in the American League.
That's fair. So I think it's going to be very interesting to watch both those players, especially with Ohapi, if he continues on the track that he's on. He is not one of the three players we'll be talking about. Sorry about that, but it's all right. Let's move on now to another player. Let's go on to Jorge Mateo here. As Mateo, I mean, we were talking about him during the prep for this segment, and I was looking at what he has, and I was just astounded. How the heck right now does this guy have three home runs all the season for a guy that is basically just a speed threat? But I mean, I guess he has a little bit of power. The most home runs he's ever hit in a season was in 2022. He did hit 13 home runs, so, you know, good on him for that. But on the season right now, he is on fire right now. An OPS plus of 195 and an OPS of 1083. I said three homers, a batting average right now of 372. Guys, this is a guy that a lot of people have just kind of waved off as a speed threat. What do you guys have to say right now about the Orioles infielder?
All right, guys, my three words are add another checkbox. This is a guy coming into the season. He's going to play defense. He's going to steal some bases, you know, and you have the opening game in Boston. He steals two bases. Great. He's going to be a guy that steals second and steals third a couple times a year. He's probably going to have 50, 60, maybe 70 stolen bases. I don't think that's out of the question. And he's added a new wrinkle to his game. It's so exciting. 83rd percentile average exit velo, 79th percentile expected wOBA, 87th percentile expected batting average. He's another guy that if he hits the ball on the ground, he has 99th percentile sprint speed, so he can figure it out. But he's a guy has been launching, has the three home runs. They're all pooled nicely together. But he's increased his max exit velo each season. His max his average exit velocity is up from under 87 miles per hour last year to 92 this year. Is that sustainable? I don't know. The launch angle did get a little bit lower. He's not quite sweet spotting it as often as he did last year. And the barrel rates are only slightly up. But I do think a good hitting version of Jorge Mateo is here to stay. And I think this could be a big breakout in like a war perspective, because he's going to get positive base runs. He's going to get positive fielding runs. He plays shortstop. So those are three huge factors. And then if he's like plus 10 batting runs on the season, has a 115 OPS plus or a 110 OPS plus, we could be talking about a guy that has 6-7 war season, where Andrés Jiménez was last year, Tommy Edman was last year, these defensive wizards that put it together at the plate finally and have a mammoth season.
Yeah, so my three words are five tool player, because that's exactly what he's looked like this year. Last year he had 14 defensive runs saved at shortstop, and he took a step forward offensively. I'm not saying he was a star or anything, because he only had a 646 OPS, but he did hit 13 homers while also leading the AL in steals with 35. The dude's always been lightning fast. I remember when he was coming up with through the Yankees organization and then the A's, and then get straight to the Padres. He always had a ton of potential in the speed department and the defense department, initially as the center fielder. But I think, this, if he figures out how to hit, I mean, I've always thought if he's even a league average hitter, he's going to be, he could steal 50, 60 bases a season. But I think that this is a guy who could be, a 20, 25 homer with, 60 steals, which we haven't seen in a long time. So I'm really happy with what I see from Jorge Mateo. Obviously, I think he's going to come down to earth a little bit, but I think if the Orioles are going to succeed, he's going to be a catalyst for this offense.
Okay, sorry to cut you off, Alex. Mac, do you see any Jose Reyes in Jorge Mateo?
Oh, a little bit, honestly. Watching him play this, watching him play this year. I mean, I remember Reyes was never necessarily like a true power hitter, but he always had a good hit tool and a ton of speed. I will say Reyes was never that good of a defender. He was a pretty below average defensive shortstop, but I definitely do see the comparison between Mateo and Reyes.
Yeah, I can definitely see it too. I think that they're very similar archetype type players. For me, my three words for Mateo are flying under radar. Because when it comes to the Orioles right now, there are really only a couple names that you really think about this year right now. That would be Gunnar Henderson and one Adley Rutschman. There's a few other guys that are kind of thrown in there, and Mateo definitely is one of them. But most of the time, people are really only talking about, Rutschman. But now when you have a guy like Mateo who is saying, hey, guys, I'm here too, I'm also putting an emphasis on the word flying because of his speed. He is flying under the radar. Again, you talked about how he's a guy that can have 50-plus stolen bases in a season. And that's physically possible, especially with the new base rules that we have now and the new pickoff rules. So honestly, with Mateo, I think that this could be here to stay, especially if he could, just like what we were saying with Marsh, if he could keep that batting average even to a 280, even to a 280 level, this guy is going to be regarded as maybe one of the better/best leadoff hitters that we have right now. He is a strong player. The defense is there. The offense is there. The speed is there. The contact's there. And he's even starting to hit for a little bit of power. Like we talked about earlier, that over the course of his season, the highest home run average he's ever had was last year, hitting 13 home runs. Before that, it was four. It was four over the course of 2021. So before that, right now, the fact that he's already at three and we're, 16 games? Something like that into the regular season? That is really good progress to see, and it's starting to show that last year's home run numbers weren't so much just a trend, so they weren't just a flash in the pan, now we're starting to see it starting to build up a little bit more. And if he could combine those home run numbers with just getting on base and then stealing second, stealing third, we're going to be looking at a guy that could be one of the best in all of baseball. And I know I said that's a high brow, but for the archetype that he is, like you brought up Jose Reyes a bit ago, and I think that is a perfect, that is a near perfect way to try and compare him. Again, a speedy infielder with sneaky power, but is also good at just driving balls into the gap or legging out an infield single. That's exactly what this guy is, and he is going to be phenomenal if he keeps up at this rate, even like at half of what he's at right now. This guy is doing amazing things and could be one of the reasons that the Baltimore Orioles could make a big wild card push later on this year.
You know, Alex, I don't think considering Mateo as a top tier shortstop is that far out of the realm of possibility. You look at the profile, right, and you have the high speed and the high defense, and at shortstop, those are huge commodities. It's not like he's a first baseman playing elite defense. Okay, you know, whatever. Right fielder playing elite defense, cool, whatever. He's a shortstop playing elite defense. Mm-hmm. He's going to be among the league leaders in steals. And, you know, if you throw in like a 120 OPS plus, that's a superstar. Like,
yeah,
this is just look at Francisco Lindor the last couple of years. You have the great defense, of course. So I think Mateo can match the defense. And Mateo is a better base runner. It's going to steal a bunch more bases. Francisco Lindor is the best or second best shortstop in baseball, depending on who you ask. Mateo's profile this year might not be too different than that. So we could be talking about a fast rising superstar if Mateo continues to hit like even half as well as he's hitting now.
Exactly right now. And we just know this in baseball, speed kills. And you can't teach speed. You can teach fielding. You can teach a good hitting stroke. You can't teach speed. And that's what Mateo has in droves. And so now that he's able to kind of work out the rest of his game around that speed, we're looking at a guy that's going to be great. And maybe Rushman a bit.
I think that people forget that he's only 27 years old, mm-hmm. too. Because he got signed back in 2012. I remember when he was a prospect for the Yankees, they traded him for Sonny Gray. And I think now, I mean, this is around the time we start seeing some players break out. I think this is his breakout year.
I 100% agree. The only thing that makes me sad about it is it means that he may not be a free player anymore in MLB The Show, where easy pick. Fair enough, but that's different. Anyway, we're going to go on to our last player right now, and it makes me so, so happy to finally get to say this guy's name, and that is Jared Kelnick. Kelnick has been off to an incredible start on the season, an OPS plus of 219, an OPS of 1146, batting .362, and has been absolutely electric for Seattle. So I want to go last on this one. I know I've gone last on the other ones, but I want to go last on this one. Guys, Kelnick, we've seen a few years of Kelnick already. He's still a young guy, but nothing. We've seen nothing like what we've seen so far from him. Is this real? Is this not sustainable? Do you think that what we're seeing right now is going to be flash in the pan and then he goes back to the minors?
So my three words are don't give up, because I feel like it seems like a lot of people were ready to give up on Kelenic and were starting to label him a bust. I mean, heck, I'll be honest. I was skeptical of Jared Kelenic just because, you know, in years past, I mean, last year he struck out in over 33% of his plate appearances. You know, wasn't hitting the ball particularly hard. Just overall just didn't look good. I mean, 141 batting average, of 534 OPS in 181 plate appearances. But this year, I mean, so last year he hit 7 homers in 181 plate appearances, and this year he's already hit 4, plus a 62.5% hard hit rate, 94.8 miles per hour average exit velocity. This dude is tearing the cover off the ball. Statcast likes it, other than his strikeouts. The traditional counting stats, or like, you know, the traditional rate stats like average OPS, stuff like that, they show that, I mean, 1.146 OPS, 219 OPS plus. Do I think he's going to have an 1,100 OPS all year? No. But I do think that, you know, this is the Kelenic we should expect to see going forward. He's made some mechanical adjustments. I really like what I see from him. And I think that, you know, going forward, I think the Mariners have a nice young star coming up through their organization. I mean, he's only 23 years old, by the way.
So my three words are, why is undefined? I want you guys, if you are listening to the podcast or if you're one of my co-hosts here, go on Kelnick's Baseball Savant page and look at his expected WOBA in his last 50 plate appearances. It starts in the blue, and then around the 25 plate appearance mark, it shoots up to Aaron Judge territory. Like that. It is Y equals undefined. That is a slope. That is a rise is infinite over a run of zero. It is excellent. It is unbelievable to watch a player that I know both of you guys have fond memories, question mark, of, as like a prospect for Mac, because he was in the Mets system. And of course, Alex, he's a Mariner now. And I'm the outsider of the group. I'm the, oh, he's just this guy that Mac and Alex talk about. But what I do know is that I made a graphic for us, LAR_baseball, and I gave out grades for Jared Kelnick. G contact, C power, C run speed, B arm strength, C fielding, D error resistance. And I think he has solved some of the contact issues, at least some of them, maybe not all of them, but some of them. 96th percentile expected batting average out of a guy that was hitting 140 last year. What is going on? I think it is a lot of it sustainable. If I remember correctly, Seattle is kind of picking and choosing the matchups. Like, he's not facing other lefties. He's a left-handed hitter. He's not facing left-handed pitching.
That's changing a little bit.
Okay.
After the big series in Chicago where he hit a home run in every single game, the next day was against Colorado and Austin Gomber, where, again, a lefty. Oof. And they put him in, said, you know what, you've earned it. And first at-bat hits a home run 414 to dead center.
Okay, that is Austin Gomber, so I will reserve judgment. But if you can solve the platoon splits and not being horrible against lefties, I think we have a legitimate star on our hands and not just a platoon guy. I think that's what we can get out of Kelenic. That's something, like, you can see all of the tools. You can see why he was a highly regarded prospect. You can see why he was involved in a trade for I would say a future Hall of Famer, but he's kind of gone off the deep end. Robinson Cano and a top closer in baseball in Edwin Diaz. There's a reason Kelnick was in that trade, and the Mariners are seeing that, and the Mariners are probably dabbing and grittying around not Seiko, T-Mobile right now, because they have a piece from this trade that's functioning and not a Braves, Mets, and Padres reject and not getting injured in the World Baseball Classic. Sorry, Mac.
I'm sorry. Edwin Diaz, please get well, man. We all want you to get well.
Apparently, the Mets want to have him pitch in the playoffs. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, there is truth to it. But I'm gonna just say I'll save my thoughts for another time because I think that's a risk.
It's 6 months away. Like I wouldn't try it.
No, not even. I would not even remotely try that. Excuse me, but yeah. So I think that right now the plan is for Kelly to start hitting against all types of pitchers. Now I said just righties, but we will see. My three words for Kelnick are, finally looks ready, or I'm actually gonna change out that last word. Finally looks happy. Like, watching him play the game right now, it is, again, I've had the pleasure of watching him now for this entire season. And the difference between even 2022 Kelnick and 2023 is night and day. And you don't even have to look at the bat to see it. You don't even have to look at the glove to see it. You look at the face. The face of Kelnick is different. He is smiling. He is happy. He looks comfortable. He finally looks comfortable playing baseball again. And I don't know what changed. I really don't. So people are saying that it's a mentality shift. So people are saying that he's just finally hit that amount of time where he doesn't have to worry so much about going down anymore. But the change is evident. Like, I remember, it was in the game where he did hit that home run against Gomber. And, it was a later game. And after making a good play, he was out right field on an away game, just having fun, laughing, and while doing warm-ups. And I'm like, we never saw this kind of Kelnick before. We never saw a guy that was this happy playing baseball, because that's what he was good at. That's what he was good at going beforehand when he was all the way through the minor leagues and college and high school, all that stuff. He was happy playing the game. And guess what? Now he's happy playing in the major leagues. And on top of it, like, I'm going to bring up again, I know we've talked about it already a little bit, but talking about the Kelnick graphic that we made: G contact, C power, C run speed, B arm strength, C fielding. We have seen, I think, legitimately every single one of those except for arm speed and maybe run speed go up. We have seen every one of those. The contact, he's hitting 370. The power, the offensive, like the batted ball rate for him and the barrel rate of him, insane. Run speed, he's running pretty darn well. I don't know if you see, he's been playing solid, but the fielding especially. That's one thing that last year everyone was scared about when it came to Kelnick, besides when he was at the dish, is that if he was in the field, you were worried because he would drop balls constantly. He would misread plays. And now, I mean, yesterday he solo won the game for the Mariners, basically, with the only run of the game for Seattle, as well as making a game-saving diving catch out in right field, which, mind you, he mostly plays left. He doesn't play right very often. He just decides to go into right field and makes an incredible diving catch to save the game against the Rockies. Kelnick right now is playing in a way that he finally looks happy. He finally looks ready to be playing the game. And that's what Mariner fans have been wanting, is just him to have fun. Because this is what happens. Is this level of production sustainable? Absolutely not. If we're getting this Kelnick all year, we're not even... This guy's MVP. Like, there's not a question about that. But if we can have a guy that their OPS is, you know, near 900, if we have a guy whose batting average is 280 and he's hitting 30 home runs and playing good defense and is able to hit against lefties and righties, I don't see why this guy is a superstar right now at this exact moment. He's also my pick for most improved player, so maybe I'm trying to speak a little more good vibes into the universe. But no, I will admit, I was a guy that was very down on Kelnick going in after the 2022 season. I liked some of the things, but I'm like, man, I get the guy is young, but he just looks so lost. 2023, he no longer looks lost. He finally looks ready. Any other notes we have on these three players before we move on to our trivia segment? Did not think so. All righty. So, with that being said, it is time for our trivia segment, and I am back in the host chair for this one. And first off, I need to give a shout out here because we've been inspired a bit by one of the best baseball podcasts, the best baseball groups around in John Boy Media. They've been doing these grids of where you have a team, it's like one team in one grid, one team on the X-axis, one on the Y-axis, and where they interject, you have to try and put a player in that position. We're going to be doing that, but head to head between Mac and Splash. So I have a grid here. I have a grid. It is grayed out, so you guys can't see it. So what's going to happen here is there are 9 spots, 3 teams on either axis. I'm not going to tell you what the teams are on the side. I am going to read out the name of the two teams, and the first person to buzz in and give me an answer wins the square. If you get a player that is not in, that does not fit in that interjection, the square goes to the opposite person. So be careful when you buzz in, because you have to know. So I'm not giving like 5 minutes to think, oh, is it this? Is this? There's no, you got to give me an answer on this one. And like I said, I have the grid right here. Do you guys have any questions about this? So again, thank you again to John Boy. You guys have done amazing work.
Does it have to be an active player?
No. I'm going to say no on that one.
Sweet.
And they have to have like played for them in person.
They have to have played at least one game.
Not like minor league stuff.
No minor league. Quintana would not count.
Yeah. Like you say, if we had Boston Red Sox and Mariners, you could not say David Ortiz.
Big Papi!
All right. So, do you guys understand the rules? Any other questions you guys got?
I'm pumped. Yep,
sounds good. All I need you to do is just buzz in or just make an eh sound or anything you want to use. And the first person to ring in for when I say the group, and you guys will start to figure out what the teams are as I say them, but I'm not going to tell you outright what they are.
Right.
So we're going to start off with the first one here. Phillies Cardinals. Ryan, throw a spot.
Scott Rowland.
Scott Rowland. I will have to double check every single one in thing, yeah, just for fun, but I know you're right. But for Scott Rowland, for the Phillies and the Cardinals, you bet that he has been with both teams. So that is Scott Rowland and the points for Splash.
My slow reaction time's coming into play already.
I was about to say, come on. Splash is, I made this with the hope that, you know, hey, let's change it to reaction time more than just pure knowledge.
Yeah, and no, I get that.
Already seeming to bite you back.
when we get like an LAR facility, we should do this with like academic bowl buzzers. That'd be a
100%.
Fun.
I would love
to. Oh my God. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up here, we're going to have Orioles and Tigers.
Yo, Andrew Miller.
Andrew Miller is the answer from Mac. We check on baseball reference.
Bro, I'm still thinking. Who the heck? What?
Andrew Miller has played for the Tigers and for the Orioles.
Yeah, he was only on the Orioles for like 2 months, but
I have no recollection of him on the Tigers.
He was drafted by them.
All right, it's
he was a high first round pick.
It's 1-1, guys. The next square that you guys will have to try and make is Orioles and Nationals. Orioles and Nationals. Who's a player that has played for both of them?
Yo, Gerardo Parra. All
right, so it's Mac. I heard Mac first. He's a Gerardo Parra.
Yep.
As we check on baseball reference, Gerardo Parra for the Nationals and the Orioles.
He won a ring with the Nats.
In fact, played both.
Oh God.
Yeah,
I was gonna say Matt Wieters, but that's a shame.
Oh God, I forgot about that guy.
Dude, man, Matt Wieters used to be one of my favorite players.
He was so good.
All right, so Mac leads 2-1.
Let's
go. Next line that we have here. Astros and Phillies.
Yo, Roy Oswalt.
All right. Mac, you got to stop buzzing in. You got to stop saying the name of the player until I call you. Because the first one on that one was Splash.
Wait, was it?
Yes, because remember, I have to hear you because remember, there's the delay.
Oh,
Zoom.
My God, I'm an idiot. Yes, yeah. Okay,
so,
I get that.
So, Splash, your answer, please.
Yeah, you go.
Heart Attack Hector Neris.
Hector Neris. As we take a look at Hector. I can't say Heart Attack at that point because that will always only be for Fernando Rodney for me. But for Neris, he is playing for the Phillies and for the Astros. So Splash, it is now 2-2 with five boxes left to go.
This is much more stressful than normal trivia.
I'm aware, but hey, you like
that's
it,
the point.
Yes.
All right, the next box here, we've got the Cardinals and Tigers. Splash.
Edgar Renteria. World Series, not really hero, but he played in the World Series for them in 2004 and was on the Tigers, MLB Power Pros legend, 2008.
He was on the Tigers, yeah.
Also Braves legend.
With the Cardinals, and he has, wait a second, Edgar Renteria. Wait a second.
Yeah, he made the last out of the 2004 World Series.
Yes, he did. Yep, he did. So, yep, that is right. Edgar Renteria. I was looking at the baseball reference page, and for some reason, I couldn't find the colors for the Tigers.
Okay. So, 2008 right. Tigers, baby.
Weird. That team was not good.
All right, Splash, you now lead 3-2.
All right.
The next one is Tigers Astros.
Yo.
Splash.
Justin Verlander.
Yep, and that's JV. I don't even have to look on that one.
Yeah.
Like,
is my internet lagging or something? Because, like.
No, I mean, it possibly could. Me, but
I was gonna say because I definitely heard myself buzz in first again.
But no, that's the thing, is that you buzzed in like a moment before Splash, but like there's always usually a couple second delay when it comes to Zoom.
Okay, no, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna listen back to the podcast, and it's gonna be Max screaming "Yo!" and then like 5 seconds later.
yeah, definitely not gaslighting you. Nope, not at all. How mess would that be? Just to keep the streak alive. I'm Vince McMahon. I've got to keep the streak alive.
Alex, have you heard the joke about the gaslighter?
Anyway, next up here, you don't get to do that, Splash. Sorry. Anyway, Splash, you currently lead 4-2. One more, and you win the game. So, Mac, you need to sweep all of these.
Mm-hmm.
Mac and Splash. The next one is Cardinals and Nationals.
Yo.
Okay, that was Splash first.
What? Okay.
We're going to go with
the podcast afterward, boss.
We're going to go with Big Country Matt Adams, or Big City Matt Adams.
Matt Adams.
Is that his name?
I think it's Big. Is it Big? It's something big. I think it's Big City.
Big City?
Yep. Well, yep. Nationals and Cardinals is correct.
Can you verify
Adams.
The nickname?
For the nickname of... I'm trying to see where the nickname is on Baseball Reference. It's not showing any nicknames for him. That's depressing. Oh, well. Anyway.
Yeah, Big City. Big City and Jumbo Pepsi.
What? What? Jumbo Pepsi. That's
Jumbo
not
Pepsi
real, man.
Is the worst name. My word.
That is the...
Anyway. All right. Splash, that does give you guys the win. Do you guys want to try and fill out the rest of the bracket anyway?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Because I'm playing this next under protest.
protest. All right, yeah. Orioles. I'm gonna do the umpire thing of drawing the big P in the air.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
but no, it is Phillies and Orioles next.
Yo,
Mac.
Jim Thome.
Jim Thome. Yep, that's
Kurt
right.
Schilling.
All right, and then the last box. You may have already put it together. It's Nats and Astros.
Bzz.
Splash.
Dang it. Pass. I'm okay.
You can't screwed pass. You just lose.
I screwed that up. I totally butchered that.
Do you want to put a Scherzer, name in there anyway?
And obviously, Scherzer never played with the Astros.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Mac, do you want to put a name in there anyway?
I mean, yeah, sure. Brad Lidge, actually. Come to think of it, Brad Lidge.
Yep.
Very briefly played with the Nats, fair. I'm pretty sure.
Look at Brad Lidge's page. He has played for the Astros and he has played for the Nationals. So, yep, you got that one.
Yeah, he very, very briefly played for the Nationals.
He did. Yep, it was one season.
I don't know why I remember him on the Nationals. I don't know if I actually watched him pitch a game.
It was his final, his final years. Was,
final season,
was
because he was with the Phils, the Astros. He was really good. He was lights out Lidge. I mean,
lights out Lidge.
Albert.
All right.
Pujols
so Splash, you have won our first edition of the grid knockout challenge.
Well, at least until Mac reviews the podcast footage and goes in and edits his yokes.
Yeah, exactly.
Until Mac goes in and edits all the footage.
Yeah. Just an elaborate gaslighting scheme for all
you'd
three
have
of us.
Go to instant replay on this one.
I'm so sorry. Once you use your challenge, it is gone, and you lose a timeout.
Ah.
All right. But with that base, congratulations to Splash.
That was fun. That was a great one.
We may bring this one back every now and then.
That is
a good fallback.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a good one.
We can have recurring trivia topics.
That'd be fun. I'm down for that.
Yeah, because like I have the Wikipedia game.
Yeah, that's always good.
You have the grid, and then Mac has... he has the friggin' Frick Frack,
who he played for.
The what?
Yeah, who he played for.
Yeah, it was who he played for. I did.
Yeah. Also, Kevin Newman just hit a home run. What is happening in life?
I didn't know he still played baseball, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, he wasn't in the Reds starting lineup this year, opening day lineup, sadly. But I made a graphic for him.
True. All right, guys, but we are at the end of the show. This is the time for our final segment, which we like to end every show with, the moment to ourselves, where we take a minute, just talk about whatever's on our minds, anything we want. It does not have to be baseball related, but it absolutely can be. Is there anyone who would like to go first today? All right, I guess I'll go first then, if no one is saying anything. So I'll go first in 3, 2, 1. I've been a baseball umpire for a long time. Again, baseball umpire was actually my very first job when I was 13 years old. And I know how hard it is. There's a reason why on this show, I won't badmouth umpires almost at all. I try to hold it because I've walked the walk and I've seen how hard the job is. I was watching the game yesterday between the Cubs and the Dodgers, and I was dumbfounded. That ninth inning was one of the worst officiating jobs by Barber that I have seen in a while. He missed, I think it was 4 straight calls. And I understand the idea of consistency and all that, but you can't expect a guy that to try hit a 95 mile per hour fastball that is a ball and a half inside about to hit your hand. You can't expect a guy to, even if you know that that's a strike, you can't have that happen. I think we need to have a lot more accountability for these umpires. And that's one of the reasons why I really like up scorecards, is that it really does give a lot more sense of accountability for some of these guys. Umpires, please, for the sake of the game and for the sake of me being able to call myself an umpire, please continue to improve. Pat Hoberg, the GOAT, by the way. Anyway, who would like to go next? All right, Splash, let's hear it, bud. You got 3, 2, 1, begin.
Folks, I was looking at Baseball Reference the other day, and I have come to the conclusion that I'm correct in saying that Archibald is the second best shortstop in MLB history, if you count Alex Rodriguez as a third baseman, which I think is a fair thing to do because he played like half of his career in both. Whatever. Archibald is the definition of him. He had a 9.8 win season back in 1935, 10 offensive war. He was third place in MVP, probably should have won the MVP that season, was third place in MVP in 1938, was an all-star in 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42. Wow. MVP votes in every, or just about every season there as well. And he's a guy that no one talks about because he died 4 years after his playing days. He wasn't inducted into the Hall of Fame on his first ballot. He was inducted by the Veterans Committee 33 years after he died and 37 years after the end of his career. So put some respect in Archibald's name, boys and girls.
100%. A good statement from the leader of the Archibald fan club. Anyway, Mac, on to you. What?
I said truth.
Truth, yeah. All right, Mac, on to you for your moment to yourself. You've got 3, 2, 1, begin.
So I know that Alex and I had a little debate before this show, but obviously the Mets are on a 10-game road trip right now. All of these games are being played on the West Coast. So I just want to put it out there that I don't know how I feel about staying up until, you know, 1 a.m. or so to, you know, watch games. Or, you know, on Friday night, the A's walked 17 batters in a 9-inning game. But, you know, the game was still over by 1:15 a.m. So it was about, you know, a 3.5-hour game. I feel like in years past, that would probably be a 4, 4.5-hour game. And I would have to stay awake till 2 a.m. So while I don't necessarily love staying up late to watch games, I think, you know, I think what Alex said about, you know, having to watch games at 4 o'clock if you're on the West Coast and your team is facing an East Coast team. I don't think these West Coast start times are as bad as they used to be, especially with the pitch clock.
100%. And I'll give my own little brief notes. You said that we have debating about this. I'd rather have a job, watch baseball that means I have to stay up a little bit later than me getting fired for leaving work early. So, with all that being said, that is all the time that we have for today's show. I want to thank you all for listening. Make sure you go follow us on Twitter, the main show Twitter, at LAR underscore baseball. You can go follow me on Twitter at thesportsguy242. You can go follow Mac on Twitter at Matthias_A_K. And you can go follow Splash at MrSplashMan19. But from all of us here at Losses Above Replacement, we want to thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe. And I hope to see you all real soon. Thank you.